And Arnie Sherman.
You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. Arnie Sherman, it is a good Sunday morning.
Such a good Sunday morning that we're going to be talking about cannabis. You know, for our listeners, everybody knows that January 1st, cannabis has become legal as a recreational, supplement.
Right.
That we can get from, dispensaries all over Missoula. And there's a lot to discuss about that. I've seen that we've already had, in the first month alone, almost $23 million in sales. That's more than $20 in sales per every man, woman, and child in the state. And it's generated $3 million in tax money that's going to be used for drug treatment and other sorts of things. So it's a win-win sort of across the board for everyone.
And Missoula has something like 56 dispensaries or some number of dispensaries that they have.
Yeah, most of them are limited in terms of their growing capabilities. So we need, a lot to cover the masses. But we're going to be discussing everything cannabis with someone that you know because, you've worked with him over the years, Richard Eggers.
Right, Richard Eggers from Bitterroot Cannabis, located over by the Orange Street Circle exit off of I-90, which actually is quite a great location. Location, location, location.
Isn't that right next to the Panda, the Pagoda restaurant?
Right.
You can get high and go in there and get Chinese. Get egg rolls. It's
you perfect can't smoke, combination. You can't smoke out in public, which we.
That's
we'll
right.
We'll talk to him about that.
Right. But, I don't know what the rules are, but all I know is that after you do it, you want egg rolls and Cheetos.
There's a gas station right next to
that. Gas station. Perfect place to go shopping.
Well, I know Richard. I've known him for many years, actually, and he's very professional, very knowledgeable, very That's the face to me of what this industry is in a sense.
Yes.
And that professionalism is really important because, I've traveled to other states. You've traveled to other states where recreational marijuana is available. They're not all the same, and not everybody has the same kind of demeanor, if you will.
No.
So anyway, it'll be a good conversation, Arnie. I'm excited to welcome our guest, Richard Eggers, from the founder of Bitterroot Cannabis.
I'm looking forward to discussing everything cannabis.
Me too. Back after this with our guest. Arnie Sherman, we are back with our guest, the founder and owner of Bitterroot Cannabis, Richard Eggers.
Richard, how are you today? How are things going?
Things are going great. How are you guys?
Good. I have to tell you, Richard, the last time that I had an experience with cannabis, I was using a strainer to get the seeds and the stems out of it. So you can imagine how long ago that was. Oh. But things have changed a lot.
They definitely have, yeah.
So how have things – the first thing everybody wants to know is recreational cannabis has been in place now in Montana since the beginning of January. And how are things going?
Things are going great. Yeah, things are going really good. We're really busy. Yeah. Seeing a lot of new faces, a lot of first-time users, which is not surprising, but really cool to see.
I've read that the state reported for the month of January $22.6 million in sales, of which almost $13 million was recreational use, and it produced about $3 million in tax revenue. Were those numbers that the industry was prepared for?
I think a lot of people were prepared for that. Yeah, we knew it was going to be the sales were going to be pretty high and that we were going to bring in a lot of tax revenue for the state.
Scott, that means that for every man, woman, and child in Montana, they sold $22 worth of cannabis. That's a pretty hefty number.
For a state that's about a million people, you're 100, you're right.
Well, plus tourists. We have tourists. And
well, that's That's a good question, right, Arnie? Like Richard, of the folks that you have kind of walked through the turnstiles, new faces, how many are local versus how many are out-of-staters or people that are passing through?
I've seen a lot of out-of-staters, a lot of people passing through. I actually saw a bunch of people today that were on road trips, skiing road trips, and hitting all the slopes around Colorado, Wyoming, and Montana, and going through Idaho and stuff.
Well, you know that most of the tourist season in Montana, the time of the year where we get the most aggregate number of tourists is third quarter. You know, July, August, and September. We get between 5 and 6 million tourists coming in during that period of time. And I guess so the follow-up question is, you know, it seems like we're prepared now. Are we prepared to deal with not only the, you know, local population, but another within 90 days, 5 or 6 million people coming in, many of whom, you know, will wander into cannabis emporiums?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So how much are you allowed to produce? I mean, let's get into some of the nitty-gritty. I think the show's focused on everything cannabis. And so, you know, for our listeners who may not be, you know, as familiar with all of this as you are, you know, how much are you allowed to produce and, you know, how many strains and how is that all work at this point?
So it's a tier licensing. So you buy in based off of how much space that you have available to grow the plants. And then you just fill up that space and that's what you're allowed to grow. There's no limit on how much you can have. There's no limit on how many strains you can have. It's just based off of the square footage of the canopy that you're allowed to have.
And there's a lot of
tiers in place.
So Bitterroot Cannabis, Bitterroot, your operation.
Yes.
What tier are you and how much space do you have?
We're actually at the second tier. So we're at 2,500 square feet is what we're allowed based off of canopy space.
Okay. And tier one is the highest amount?
Tier one is the lowest. Oh. And then tier two, your own provider is the lowest. And then you can go to tier one, tier two, and I think it goes all the way up to like tier 10.
Wow. But the question is in the sense of, so you have 25,000 square feet of harvesting.
2,500.
2,500 square feet?
Yes. I have 2,500 square feet of harvest.
I see. And that's offsite, not where you're currently located, because you're located on Orange Street right off of the exit off of the interstate. But where do you do your grow?
Oh, we grow in the Bitterroot. We grow in Florence.
Got it. Hence the name Bitterroot Cannabis. And are there plans, given that you have this great kind of, you know, location, because you are probably one of the best locations in town, being right off the interstate, do you have the ability to expand your grow operation in the Bitterroot in Florence?
Well, we do. Yeah, absolutely. That's on the books right now. We're planning on expanding after the successful first month and the continued success of the middle of the second month. We are definitely have plans to expand.
And if you expand, you have to apply to the state for a different tier license?
Yes. Yep. We have to apply right now. So it's really weird on how you apply. You can apply one tier level per year with exceptions to be able to jump five tiers in place. There's a lot of confusion based off of how to do that right now. They just had a meeting last Wednesday to discuss it. But yeah, it's one tier per year.
And are you seeing national cannabis operations moving into Montana?
I want to say yes, but they have people that are residents running it.
Right. Like I think Cookies, for example, is a national operation, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. But they have local people, but they're still part of it. Now, what I'm saying is, can someone come in here from out of state and apply for, you know, a tier 10 license and start monopolizing the industry?
An out-of-state resident, not right now.
Okay.
Personally, they
want like a MedMen or like one of those national kind of nationally visible kind of providers.
Exactly. Yeah. They wouldn't be able to do that right now. Like we're grandfathered in for like no new dispensaries can come in and set up shop until June or July of 2023. So we got some they're giving us the local people, the people that have been in the industry for a while, a little bit of a head start.
What is the consumer benefit or the consumer benefit of you being a tier two versus a tier 10? Like, is there some savings or some, is it just how much you can harvest and it's your job to price it the way you want to price it, regardless of what tier you are?
Yeah. So, with benefit with, when you got the lower tiers is, there's a lot less, square footage for the canopy. And so there's a lot more detail going in per square footage. So we're able to, perfect the the quantity rather than quality. When you get up into the like the tier 12 licenses, it's like 50,000 square feet. So you have so much more room to cover and so many more people that you have to hire to cover all this. And of course, the overhead goes up, and I'm sure the cost of cannabis will go up. So definitely the benefit is lower cost and higher quality.
So is it like it's equivalent to, let's say, a small kind of coffee shop or barista versus a Starbucks, right? Where you have your own beans, your own kind of way of brewing and of serving it up. And that's your calling card, so to speak. That's your brand.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there a brand that Bitterroot Cannabis has that, let's say, others don't have? Or is there some kind of way you position yourself differently?
Yeah, the edibles that we make are our own recipes that my wife and I have been perfecting since we got into the industry back in 2009 in the medical industry. And then a lot of our strains too are strains that we crossbred ourselves that other providers don't have, because we haven't released the seeds or the clones out to the public or into the industry at all. So we do have things that other providers don't have.
So for 12 years, you were doing mostly medical marijuana.
Yes,
Montana. Correct. And now you're able to branch out. And I'm assuming that because you can get into recreational, there are some different strains and there's some different edibles that you're producing that are more oriented towards, a consumer, a general consumer rather than a medical consumer.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we definitely have some lower dose cannabis that I like to offer to people who've never consumed before, so they're not completely floored or having a really uncomfortable experience with it. And it's a nice, mellow, easy step into the into consumption.
Right. For our listeners, obviously, who are familiar with this, they would understand it. For those that aren't, there's some balance between THC, which is the psychoactive element to cannabis, and the CBD part of it, which is more oriented towards, pain control and dealing with, people that have fibromyalgia or arthritis or other medical issues that are looking for maybe more of a, more CBD in it rather than THC. So you're developing, different, strains based on what they can, what impact and what effect they have on, on the consumers, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Yep.
Arnie, please go.
We're fascinated by this. On 2,500 square feet, how often can, what's the life cycle of a plant? How long does it take the plant to grow, harvest, and then, plant and produce others?
So I generally, based off of time alone, it's a plant's life cycle from clone to finish is 6 months. For me, everybody's going to be different. Everybody has their own processes. Some people may be only 2 months, 3 months, because they're having a lot more plants to cover up more canopy space instead of just less plants and just bigger.
So your turnover really is equivalent to one time 5,000 square feet worth of plants.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. So how has the state been to work with? I mean, the state here is, big bureaucracies and cannabis don't always fit together. And I know they had to create a computer system, to track all this. And they had to figure out a way to roll in the existing medical marijuana related files and activities with the recreational part of the business. How, from your perspective, how has that all, come together?
It's been really good, actually. There's still a couple of hiccups. There's always been hiccups working with the state. The system's not perfect. We've had issues in the past, and they're really, they work with us on those issues. When it transferred over recreational, it was pretty smooth. It was, we were a little concerned that, we didn't know how they were going to track. I didn't know how they were going to track, and they didn't know how they were going to track when I talked to them, up to a week before we went recreational. So we were like, how do we record these sales? Because in the law it says we're supposed to record the sales. And right up to a week, they told us, well, here, this is how you're going to do it. So we had all this time since it passed until it went into effect of how we were going to do it. But it worked good. Everything was smooth, and it's been smooth so far. And, not a lot of hiccups at all.
And what has been the evolution of the banking relationships? I mean,
it's come a long way. Yeah, it's come a long way. We went for the longest time without having the ability to bank at all. And that was really tough. We were thankful to get into a program. I can't say what it is because I signed an NDA. We were able to get into a startup program to be able to bank, legally. And that's been really helpful for us.
So will the banking allow customers to use credit cards, or they're all going to still need to pay in cash?
Still cash, because it's still federally illegal and they base that off of the credit card and debit card companies themselves.
Right.
So from transitioning to medicinal to recreational, I imagine you built up a nice clientele over the last several years of medicinal clients, right? And then that started to loosen and people could take their medicinal card to any provider. Did you see an influx of other providers, customers, as well as your customers going to other providers? Like, what's that been about?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. As soon as that opened up, it was definitely seeing a lot of new patients, and my patients, of course, went elsewhere. And it was really nice because for the longest time, when you signed up for one patient with one provider, if we ran out of a product, they wouldn't have access to that product and they would have to wait until we got that product in with no ability to go someplace else unless they changed on the application form, which could take a couple weeks to do the change. And then when that opened up the door, they were able to Bitterroot Cannabis is out of my candy bars. So I'm going to go down the street and they have candy bars and they were able to pick up candy bars.
I've always wondered that. So let's say a Blue Dreams, right, at Bitterroot Cannabis, that strain, is it the same strain and consistency and potency as down the street at another provider? Or
I would say no, unless those two providers traded clones and got the same clones, I would say it's not the same.
So everybody has a different version of a popular strain.
Absolutely. And even if they have the same clones, depending on the grow style, those strains could be the growing techniques can make that batch completely different than one other provider who grew it.
Right. Not all oranges are the same. Not all apples are the same, right?
Yeah. Not all OG Kushes are the same.
That's exactly right.
It's not like you go get your prescription filled at CVS and it's Ativan and it's also Ativan at Walgreens. Right. Has the proximity that Bitterroot Cannabis has to the hospital or the healthcare industry, some of the providers been helpful for you guys?
Not a lot of people say exactly where they're coming from when they come in. But we have had a couple that were like, well, I was just over here at Providence and I saw your sign when I was coming out to the parking lot and decided to swing by. But not everybody's pretty adamant about sharing their medical visits.
Of course.
So Richard, I'm a customer. I'm walking in the door for the first time. Walk me through, what happens? What am I allowed to buy? How much am I allowed to buy? What are all the parameters of recreational consumer aspect of the business?
Yeah, absolutely. So you walk in, of course, we're going to greet you with a big smile, friendly hello, ask you for your ID, make sure it's valid. You have to have valid ID. And then we have a loyalty program. We sign you in with your name and your birth date. So on your birthday, you can come in and get a discount on a joint or an edible of your choice. And then we walk you through all of the products that we have. We have menus set up. You get a limit to an ounce a day of flower. And then equivalent of 800 milligrams of edibles or 8 grams of concentrate is what you're legally allowed to get in any mixed match form.
Per day.
Well, in the law, it says you're an ounce per day, 5 ounces per month is what you're legally allowed to purchase. But there's no tracking going on when it comes to a recreational consumer. When we input the sale for tracking, you're just put in there as a consumer, and that's it. There's no name, there's no license put into it at all. And so, if you wanted to, you can go down to the next place and get announced, and so on and so forth.
This is a question I've had. So, what's the frequency of a visit? Is it 3 times a month? Is it 5 times a month? And Or does it just vary? But what's your average of your
average is like once a week.
Once a week, so four times a month. And the benefit of four times a month is they can they obviously get payday or they get a check, so they have more money, right? Versus going in one time a month and picking up a month's worth. Like I'm trying to understand what guides the thing. Is it pretty much when money comes in? Is there like a benefit to have you store it because it's fresher, it's in a more controlled environment versus them that would put it in a refrigerator? I don't know any of this, so it's, I'm sorry to sound so naive, but.
You're fine. Yeah, definitely. No, it really just varies. It definitely, paydays definitely affect the frequency of the people that we get. And then one person will come in and they're four times visits. Their first day of the month, they're going to get an ounce or a half ounce, going to get a large amount. And then they're going to run out and they're not going to have the cash. And so they're going to come in and grab a couple grams here and there to hold themselves off to the next payday. And so it definitely varies.
Or if they have a hot date.
Or if
there's a concert in town
Absolutely. That definitely would play a factor into that.
So Scott, you wouldn't know about any of those things.
No, I wouldn't. No. is there a benefit to when someone comes at the beginning of the month, they load up, let's say, they stock up, and then let's say they come back the week after or the week after, are they traditionally buying less throughout the month, or are they still buying the same amount that they did at the beginning of the month?
It really varies. Yeah, it's everybody's different. I definitely see on average people buying less as the month goes on until the next payday, and then they'll buy more and just to get themselves.
So for our unaware consumers out there, how much on average does an ounce cost? And if you were rolling, joints, how many joints do you get out of an ounce?
An average ounce costs anywhere from $150 to $200 before taxes. There's 23% tax in Missoula right now. And then, depending on how big your joints are, if you're just doing a normal half gram joint, you're going to get 56 joints off an ounce.
Right.
That's a lot, Arnie.
That's a lot in a week.
Oh, yeah. If you're a big smoker and you love your blunts or your cones, you're going to get 14 or 20.
Right.
But it must be so nice to deal with customers that are all kind of mellow. Nobody's ever in a road rage scenario at Bitterroot Cannabis, right? Oh, man.
The customers have been amazing. It's great. Everybody comes in, they're smiling, they're happy. We get the really excited people that just jazz me up. They're great to work with. They're just so happy that they can just walk in and everything's cool. They don't have to worry. They can get their cannabis and they can leave, and it's just legally. And it's been really cool.
I think tourists also appreciate the fact that they can enjoy the beauty of Montana and all that it has to offer, but also be able to get their cannabis because they enjoy that as part of their vacation or their trip or whatever. It's part of their life and they don't have to fly in with it or take it across state lines.
Well, most states still don't have recreational cannabis. So a lot of people come here from, places where they can't get it. And it's like part of the experience about being in Montana. You could just walk in and get it. To some people
Yeah.
If you're living in a state where it's not legal, and some places there isn't even medical marijuana that's readily available, it's a complicated process to get it from friends, and the quality is always, at risk and blah, 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 blah. It's like the old days.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Some guy behind Walgreens by the dumpster.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, absolutely. Better not ask what it is.
Right.
Well, there are two adjacent states that butt up to Montana, Wyoming Wyoming and Idaho you can't get it. You'd have to go into Washington, at least to the west.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
There's 30 states, 32 states where it's not legal, recreational marijuana. Still majority of the country. So. Yeah.
It's amazing.
A lot of people come here from those states in particular because those are usually you know, more conservative states, or they're the middle Midwestern states, and they're coming out to Montana, you know, the old Rocky Mountain High kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, Rocky Mountain High, absolutely.
And they can, you know, they can get it here when they show up.
Well, Texas, as we know, a huge influx of people coming in from Texas is big, probably sure. one or two market, you know, feeder markets.
Are employees allowed by law? I mean, it's not to smoke during the day while they're working.
Some places do. We don't here. Number one is the place that we rent out. We've signed a lease agreement. There's no consumption of cannabis on the grounds.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we like to have a clear head here. So, because we are dealing with cash, we're dealing with customers. So, we want to make sure that we're getting, you know, getting the right information to people, getting the right change back to people, and everything, like, and the right products and stuff like that.
Under the current iteration of the recreational use law, are you allowed to have a lounge in your facility where people can smoke on the premise if customers can smoke on the premise?
No. So there is consumption of cannabis is illegal in the public view. So I would think anywhere that the public can enter would be public view. And then if you're around other people, I mean, I guess some people can get around with loopholes by saying it's a club and
right.
there's a fence or there's another room. And so it's beyond legal view, but there's also the smoking law in Montana. There is no smoking right. indoors. And so that would play a role too. So there's definitely, I'd say no, but there's definitely probably some loopholes out there where people are.
Right. I noticed in places like Seattle, Washington, they have some places where there are lounge, you know, a lounge attached to it where people can smoke on premise. Was our law crafted based on another state? Did we use another state as a model for Montana?
Yes. Yep. Absolutely. They definitely took some stuff from Colorado on Colorado's law.
Which actually begs the question, as you were kind of contemplating first going into medicinal and then recreational, did you do any market research of your own and kind of go to Colorado, you know, check out what they're doing in Colorado or Washington State to say, hey, I like what they do over here at this place, but not at this place?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. When Washington legalized, I definitely went over to Spokane, checked out Spokane, went over to Kent, Washington, went over to Seattle, of course, for Hemp Fest. After they legalized, there's a lot of vendors over there, a lot of dispensaries over there. We went and checked out the new and up and coming products and checked out the dispensaries to see what we liked and what we didn't like. And there's definitely places where we felt really, really uncomfortable. And we were like, we're definitely not going to do this.
Sure.
And we felt comfortable. And we were like, okay, this is homey. This is comfortable. I can walk in here and feel comfortable talking to the bud tenders and stuff like that.
There in Las Vegas, there are some cannabis superstores.
Mm-hmm.
I actually went into one. There was one called Area 13, I think it's called.
Oh, yeah.
And it was the size of a Costco, literally. it had a coffee shop inside. You walked in the door, they gave you a buzzer because till a cannabis counselor was available to wait on you. It was huge. You couldn't see from one end to the other. They took some, you know, and it's like a 2 or 3 blocks off the strip. They literally took an old abandoned warehouse and made it into an entire, you know, cannabis experience, from clothing to a large coffee shop to all of the pipes and I mean, just everything, but in such an abundance. The parking lot, when I happened to drive in to take a look at it, because I was really curious, they probably had 60 cars parked there.
Yeah, I bet. Absolutely.
So, I mean, that law is completely different because the amount that they would have to have available to them would be an enormous amount of product to serve something like that I believe, I don't know, I didn't look, it's open 24 hours a day in essence. You can pop in there at any time and buy. You're not allowed. You can only sell what you produce. You can't buy a national brand of something that you don't make, like a soda, for example, or something from that some national companies manufactured. In Montana, you can't buy that and sell that in your establishment.
Currently not. Yeah. We cannot purchase anything from companies out of state unless they're in the state and they're registered with the state, and then we could, but they're not right now. So
and then you're talking about product, but any peripherals and accessories you can bring in from wherever.
Like, oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, pipes and stuff like that we can bring in from wherever.
Are you diversifying your product line? Like, because when you have someone there, they're obviously buying your product, but you have accessories and pipes and vape pens and things like that. Do you have beverages?
We do, yeah. We do a wide variety of infused products. Definitely got beverages.
Okay. Is it something that, like, what's your growth plan, right? Like, do you have a desire to become bigger or to become higher quality that other providers start to buy from you? Like, do you have, like, a phase three, right? Because medicinal's clearly been phase one. Recreational's now phase two. Is there some place that you want to grow this business to that you would like to, you could share with us?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we definitely have growth plans. We don't want to get too big, though. We don't want to lose what made Bitter Cannabis. We are very personable with our customers, and almost everybody that comes into our store knows myself and Ashley, my wife, and our employees. We only have two other employees, and we all know everybody by most everybody that comes back by name, and we don't want to lose that. We do have plans to maybe open like one other store in Montana. Grow more products, of course, but other than that, it's we want to stay nice and personable with the consumers.
You know, growing cannabis is a very niche area of horticulture. Are you the grower? How'd you learn how to do this?
So I am the grower. Been growing for 12 years. Started off reading books and going on the internet and reading blogs and forums and stuff like that. And a lot of trial and error. I failed a lot of times. Kept notes. Learned from my mistakes. When I got into the industry, I definitely worked with a bunch of other providers. I worked for providers. I worked at dispensaries before I owned my own dispensary. So I learned from other growers and picked up things here and there, what to do and what not to do, and just learned along the way.
Do you think Montana as a recreational state now is going to attract other out-of-state kind of folks that want to be your employees or your growers? Or, you know, I know my nephew worked in Massachusetts and in New Jersey and had ideas about traveling to Oregon or Washington to work. So are you starting to see some of that? Because this is a spectacular place to live, right? It's not there's a huge benefit to be here and to do something you love. So have you encountered any of that?
Big time. Yeah, we've had a lot of people dropping off resumes and not surprisingly, but a lot of people from other states, like Idaho and Washington, people that just moved to Montana coming in and dropping off resumes.
Is the notion or the concept of dispensary, which is more of a medical term, you know, dissipating? Is it changing as a result of, you know, I'm going to assume that a preponderance of the business is going to be recreational from here on out. Is that terminology now in the past sense that we're going to have a new way to look at the industry?
I don't think so. I have a lot of consumers who come in who didn't have their medical card because they couldn't afford it. And now they can consume medicinally without needing to get a card. And being like some people were a little afraid of being on a state registry. And so now they can.
Sure.
And they can ask questions about, you know, sleep aid and muscle relaxations and pain relievers and stuff like that. So I think it's expanded the industry, but I think in whole, the industry is going to stay the same.
And what's sort of the breakdown about how much of your inventory is devoted to or the customer interest? I mean, it also obviously depends on, you know, matching supply and demand. So how much of the demand is in, you know, smokable product, edible product, you know, tinctures, the other kind of thing? What's the pie chart of that?
Oh, yeah. Demand is really high for number one concentrates. We are almost sold out of all of our concentrates and went super fast. Edibles are number two. We made 6-month batches just to prep. We're like, 6 months are going to do it. We've already sold out of some of our 6-month batches already. And we're working on more right now. And then flower, we've definitely had plenty of flower, but flower is still, you know, flower is still a big seller, but it's not as big as concentrated edibles right now.
That's amazing. Let's just do a quick ID. Our guest is Richard Eggers. He is the founder and owner of Bitterroot Cannabis right here in Missoula. Arnie, I would ask this question of Richard because I find because I want to understand in the sense of when you got into this industry, it was under a different, you know, you were there to do the medicinal work and you really like, yes. To your point, you studied, you researched, you made mistakes. Is this a supportive industry? Meaning, is the grower down the street and the dispensary down the street, you know, keeping an eye on you, and are you guys helping each other, giving each other, you know, just good information and like, this is what I'm doing, or is it very much every man for themselves or every woman for themselves?
It's kind of both. I have definitely come across people who are definitely in it for themselves. And it's like, you know, I have this, and, you know,
it's collegial.
Exactly. It's the last man standing sort of deal. And I have met other, really nice, owners, dispensary owners and growers and stuff who are definitely on the edge of, more helpful. Which is nice, which is a breath of fresh air. So it's,
Do you try each other's products? Like, will you sample their product to see kind of what their strain is like?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I've definitely sampled some products and definitely have had some, owners, growers and stuff like that come in and sample our products.
Richard, what did you do before this?
I did all kinds of stuff. I had a problem with authority when it came to jobs. went through jobs a lot. My last job I had before this, I was an appliance delivery installer. Huh. So I delivered stoves and fridges and stuff like that. And then I hurt myself got hurt on the job and, ended up, not working for a while and getting into the medical by being a patient and then seeing what it did for me and then jumped into the industry.
So let me switch gears a little bit to sort of the compliance side of this. What are the laws related to, you know, you get stopped for speeding in a car? Is the laws that are similar for DUI the same for marijuana, or how is that all working itself out?
You know, I haven't heard anything when it came to DUIs on cannabis yet. Maybe it hasn't been out there a lot and happening a lot. But from my understanding, it's 0.5 nanograms in your blood. And I think that would be taken if you got into like an accident or something right. like that. But if you're driving, you're speeding, and you're not consuming it, but they can see it, it's like, like you have your package from the dispensary or something like that.
Right.
I don't think they're out there to punish you for it.
Right. I mean, if you're stopped for speeding and the window rolls down and all the smoke comes out.
Yeah, you're getting a DUI.
You're getting a DUI.
But Arnie, I don't think people are reckless when they're consuming while driving.
Well, I'm not saying they are.
They may fall asleep at a stop sign. I mean, I can see that happening.
But I definitely don't want to go anywhere after I smoke. It's like
stay put.
But Montana's a big state. You're driving from here down to, you know, Yellowstone. You know, it's a beautiful summer day. You know, you're drinking.
Get to your destination.
Yeah, you know, I'm just saying. So there are people
right.
who will smoke on the way, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I'm just trying to understand what. Well, how law enforcement is currently responding to that.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything when it comes to law enforcement. I haven't seen any DUIs come up. I haven't seen any, like, you know, news headlines of, like, a cannabis-intoxicated driver causes accident or cannabis-intoxicated driver DUI or anything like
that. Yeah, I'm not even as worried about that as much as, you know, somebody's just doing fine and maybe just speeding or goes through a light or, you know, there's some minor traffic violation and the police officer taps on the window and tells you to roll it down and he can smell, you know,
right.
The aroma in the car.
Yeah, you're definitely
going obviously to if you're doing edibles, the only thing you could be, you know, charged with is if you had an open canister of them and they were all over the place. And but if you had it, you know, if it was packed away, you're not going to smell it by taking an edible or a tincture or anything like that. But if you're you know, if you're smoking it, you're going to smell it in the car.
You're going to smell it. Yeah, absolutely. And there is some telltale signs when you're really word for it, intoxicated on edibles on a high amount. Most people can generally tell what's going on.
Is that right? Well, actually, is the state doing any type of, or is the industry doing any type of education of the consumer? Like, is there, like, you know, like, there's MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, don't drink, don't drive, drive responsibly. Is there any kind of educational effort that this, that the industry or the state's going to put in place so that people know? Like, sometimes people, the questions we're asking are based on not knowing. So how do you help people know?
I do not, I haven't heard anything. I haven't heard of any educational programs to educate people on cannabis at all. I know that some of the tax money is going to go to addiction programs and conservation, and that's pretty much about it. I haven't heard anything on the education forefront.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's important for a number of reasons. For example, people just need to know how long, for example, you know, if you're smoking a joint or taking a tincture or doing an edible, how long does it take until you're affected by it?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, we do have those. It's actually on our packaging when it comes to edibles, and when it comes to smoking, the compliance packaging does say, hey, this product takes this long to take effect. Don't operate heavy machinery, right, vehicles and stuff like that. And then I do let consumers know too, especially people who are new to it, like, sure, this is how long it's gonna be until it takes effect, this is how long it's gonna affect you, and you know, low and slow.
Sure. So for our listeners in general, I know every product probably has, depends on how many you take, but if you take the prescribed amount, you take one edible, you take one eye drop of tincture, you smoke half of a joint or whatever, how long does it take before it takes effect in those three areas generally?
So smoking is going to be pretty fast. You're looking anywhere from a couple minutes to 15 minutes. 15 minutes for like creeper strains is what they like to call them, before it take effect. And it's only going to last anywhere from an hour and a half to 2 hours. Edibles, food-based product edibles, so like gummies and candies and stuff like that, it's going to take effect in anywhere from 90 minutes. I've seen all the way up to 3 hours. For me personally, I have a weird body chemistry. It takes 3 hours for a traditional food-based product edible to take effect on me. And then it lasts anywhere from 4 to 8 hours. It lasts a really long time for me, so I have to be really careful, even though I've been consuming for a pretty long time. Still don't need a lot when it comes to the edibles. And then on tinctures, like alcohol-based tinctures and other liquid-based tinctures, takes effect a lot faster. It absorbs into the bloodstream a lot faster. So you're looking anywhere from, I've seen alcohol tinctures take as little as 15 minutes to take effect and last anywhere from 4 to 8 hours.
Yeah, because that's really important because of the delayed effect. You take something and you feel fine, and 3 hours later you decide to do something and all of a sudden it hits you.
Hits you, yeah, exactly.
It's going to hit you, and it's going to last several hours. I mean, you're going to be out or away from the house, or you know, out rowing a boat, or you know, climbing up in the hills, or doing whatever. And you need to be able to gauge that and judge that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I always tell people when they first try is to take a dose and wait. Wait for the full 3 hours, even if it affects you faster. Just wait for the full 3 hours before you consume more, because you don't want to overdo it. You don't want to be, like you said, in a position where it's going to take effect when you're out driving or when you're, like, you know, visiting your grandma or something like that. Unless she can.
Do you see more places opening up, I guess, after that initial period? Because I'm struck by how few cannabis dispensaries there are from here to Flathead. So that ride, which is on your way up to Glacier, right? There's a few in Polson, maybe one or two are on the way up, but you have to get to Kalispell. to where you see any kind of concentration of dispensaries.
Well, one of the issues related to that, Scott, has been the provisions and the restrictions or the rules that they imposed on the, you know, on the Native American communities' establishment of dispensaries.
Right.
They're under a different set of, as I understand it, a different set of and maybe more restrictive rules in applying for licensing. And, you know, that whole area is, you know, pretty much part of, you know, the Native American, you know, topography.
Yeah, tribal lands. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, the tribal lands issue is has a separate set of issues, you know, and I think they feel they're being treated unfairly by more restrictions on them than general public. And I'm not sure what they're based on, and I haven't researched it all, but I know that there it is a different, there's some difference that they're not completely happy with at this point. So that might be part of it.
Yeah. Richard, what else that we haven't covered? I mean, in the sense of, I think to Arnie's point at the outset of the conversation, the influx of tourists starting in about 90 days is going to be a real test to your stockpile, I guess, to your inventory.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Your ability to replenish.
Yes, yeah. We definitely had a couple big harvests before recreational went to effect to hold out for an influx in purchases. And we definitely have products set aside specifically for medical patients. If we sell all of our recreational supply, and then it unfortunately is what it is, and we supply just to medical marijuana patients.
I could just imagine the 4th of July weekend going up to Flathead Lake. You're in a perfect place for anybody, you know, from Butte, all, you know, from where, anywhere coming down, you know, coming up 90, going to make the turn up at the Y. You're saying, hey, let's get off here and get what we need for the, you know, for the holiday.
It's right off the highway.
Yeah. Yeah. So definitely a prime location. We've seen a lot of people who just didn't want to come in town and came right off the highway and were like, oh, hey, look at that. And,
are you allowed to put signage up?
Yeah. Yep. We do have signs up. Yep. Absolutely. Definitely. Yeah. The state did work with that. That's the one good thing. Once they went over to the Department of Revenue, they've been definitely good listeners and listening to what providers have to say and like working with us. And
I can see the sign, last cannabis for 50 feet. Please pull in here.
Fireworks.
Like fireworks signs for sure.
Let's, Arnie, let's take a quick break. Our guest is Richard Eggers. He is the owner and founder of Bitterroot Cannabis here in Missoula. Back after this. Arnie, we are back with our guest, Richard Eggers from Bitterroot Cannabis.
So how do people find out? I know you have a website. Yeah. How do they find out what you have, the products you have, where you're located, what your hours are, all that sort of thing?
A website is definitely the first place, bitterrootcannabis.com. And then Facebook, we don't have our menu up on Facebook, but definitely have contact information on Facebook so people can contact us there. And just stopping by right off of the Orange Street exit.
And your hours are?
We're open 7 days a week from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m.
And 8 p.m. is the state limit on when you can be open. Isn't that exactly correct?
Yep, we're open for the state limit.
Good. Terrific. Kind of,
the state, and is the state's been easier to work with, and the county has been easy to work with? Like, I'm curious, with the changeover to recreational, is just things starting to open up more?
Yeah, I think so. I personally think so. I've been in, you know, working with the industry for a long time, with the state for a long time, and they have definitely become a lot easier to work with. They're definitely very knowledgeable. They're there to help us succeed. They're not there to shut us down. I've been pretty impressed with it. There's been some hiccups, but nothing like major.
No showstoppers.
Yeah, exactly. No showstoppers. Yep, exactly.
And it's you and Ashley, and you have two employees, and that's how you cover that 9 to 8, 7 days a week.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Alex and Nate, they're definitely big helps for us and definitely help us cover those hours.
The last word I want to share with Richard is that in a previous life, I worked with a guy who was the manager for Brewer and Shipley, who had one song, but one song that's relevant to our topic, which was One Toke Over the Line, Sweet Jesus, was the hit song from Brewer and Shipley back in the 1970s. So That's my tie into this.
Well, you know what, Arnie? What's so nice about this is that Montana is such a, like I said, it's such a great place to live, a great place to visit, a great place to, quite frankly, run a business. And kind of everything is converging, certainly with this industry. And I think that's exciting. I think it's, I feel like we've made progress.
Definitely have made progress.
Absolutely.
It sounds like you have a great business model, and we wish you every success as this thing completely unfolds, Richard.
Yeah, thank you so much. I super appreciate that.
Thank you, Richard. That's Richard Eggers from Bitterroot Cannabis. Arnie, I will see you next week.
Next week, Scott. Take care.
Thank you for listening to What Do You Know?
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO.